Over to you.
Yes, so good morning and welcome to the CMEC meeting. Thanks so much to everyone who's braved the weather and came from afar or from near. You know, we're still waiting for some people to come from near. yes, without further ado, I would suggest we get started on the first agenda item. It is going to be tough today in terms of timekeeping. I think we have a very heavy agenda, so we really want to make sure we have a good discussion for the primary financial statements and the FISE. So, yes, if there are no further questions, comments, you can hand over to Neil.
Do you want me to go ahead and get started?
Thank you very much, Neil.
Well, thank you for the handover, and welcome to our new offices. Looks like a fair number of you have found the offices, so that's a good start. You all have Agenda Paper 1A before you with the ISB technical update. I just wanted to highlight a few items in here. I won't go through the entire slide deck. In part, I'm assuming that everyone's had a chance to look at it and also in keeping with the time. But the three things I wanted to focus on were recent issuances that have come from the ISB, some future expectations of what we plan to issue, and then some other matters that have been developing since our last meeting in June. So focusing on future issuances, just a few weeks ago, we issued our final amendments on the definition of a business. And this is a project that arose out of our IFRS 3 post-implementation review. And what it was looking to do is address some of the diversity in practice, as well as address some of the application issues that have arisen in practice. So the plan here is, or not the plan, but the requirement is for this these amendments to be effective in 2020 with early application permitted. And IFRS 3 is, as you know, a converged standard with the U.S. GAAP. So these amendments are also consistent with the changes that have been made to U.S. GAAP. Yesterday, thanks to Catherine's team, we also issued our amendments to the definition of material. And I don't know if you want to jump in, but basically these are clarifications to the definition of material, looking to make it easier to apply as well as provide consistency between the IFRS standards as well as the conceptual framework. Again, like the definition of a business, this is going to be effective 2020 with early application permitted. Is there anything else you wanted to add on that? Okay. I have the convenience of having Catherine right next to me here. And then the other thing we wanted to highlight in terms of recent issuances is the FISE discussion paper. This is the discussion paper on the classification of financial instruments as liabilities or equity. We're going to have a much longer session on that this afternoon, so I will. I don't want to steal that team's thunder, other than to say that the comment period ends January 7th. And so your feedback today will be very helpful for us as the board continues to deliberate the feedback that we hear and puts together all the comments that we receive by January 7th. In terms of future issuances, and this is moving to slide 4 in the pack, we have quite a bit coming through in 2019 and 2020, very significantly primary financial statements. We also have a session on that this morning, so I'm not going to steal that team's thunder, other than to say that some of the big decisions that are still before us relate to the very issues that we're going to be talking about with you. Since the last meeting, though, there have been further discussions primarily related to the question of subtotals and how they apply to financial institutions and conglomerates. So the previous or pre-existing tentative decisions were made in the context of general corporates. And the question is, well, some of those subtotals may not always make sense in the context of conglomerates or financial institutions. So the board's been talking about that, as well as unusual and infrequent items and disaggregation and other matters, which will come before the board in future sessions. Also wanted to point out rate-regulated activities. That's expected. My expectation is it'll be middle of 2019, probably early part of half two, so maybe the July timeframe, to be determined whether that's going to be, like PFS as well, whether that'll be a discussion paper exposure draft. But the conversations right now are focusing on disclosure, so we're incorporating the feedback that we heard from you all in the March meeting at the board's deliberations in future meetings. We also have goodwill and impairment, which is another hot topic that's going to be on our agenda today. The big discussions here is that the board is focusing on a couple of primary things. After having looked at the fundamental issue of the impairment test and the whole too little, too late problem, and is there a way to make the test more effective, after exploring a number of different ways of looking at it, including the headroom approach, there's a general view that perhaps the test is what it is, and maybe where we can help investors more is through disclosures. And that's going to be the topic of conversation for today. So disclosures about whether an acquisition is in fact a good investment, and disclosure about subsequent performance of that acquisition, in addition to some of the other objectives about simplifying goodwill, the accounting for goodwill, and simplifying the value and use test. We had a meeting last week with the board, and the big message I heard, I looked to Tom and other board members that might be at the table, was let's get on with it. So the staff is moving forward very, very diligently, and the outcome of that will be a discussion paper. And I expect that if you follow the board meeting last week, the paper said H1 2020. I very much expect it'll be accelerated from that. So. Management commentary is another big one coming out, H1 2020. That will also be discussed later today. The big development since the last meeting is that we had our first meeting with our management commentary consultative group discussing objectives and principles of management commentary. So you'll hear more of the feedback that we heard, and also we'd be very interested in your take and your considerations in that area. So those are the big highlights for what's coming up next year. And then in terms of other developments since our last meeting, most significantly is IFRS 17. I don't know if any of you followed the meeting last week. I see you smiling, Marietta. So this, as you can imagine, it's a very difficult and tricky situation. What the board discussed at the meeting last week was 25 issues that have been identified through the TRG and other monitoring activities. That was an educational session, or that piece of the board meeting was an educational session. The decision-making piece of the session was focusing on if the board were to open up IFRS 17, what are the criteria that these issues would need to meet in order for the standard to be amended? And so, in other words, what is the framework for opening up the standard? Because if you do open it up, it could turn into a Pandora's box where everyone's turning in, you know, adding in their pet project, and then the benefits of IFRS 17 and the benefits to users would unfortunately be delayed. So the two criteria that the board had tentatively or had decided on were first, any changes could not result in a significant loss of useful information. And the second is that any changes would not disrupt the implementation process or risk undue delay. So with that framework in place, the board or the staff will bring a paper to the board to get decisions about which issues to further explore. Now, just by meeting these two criteria doesn't mean that the board will definitely make an amendment. It's a condition for considering an amendment, but then we would still have to go through the process of what could we possibly do to make the amendment, and so there could still be a narrower population of what might actually change if anything were to change. So more discussions to come, but the next step is going to be board decisions about directing the staff on which issues to explore.
Could I just add on that, you mentioned the 25 issues, yes, that were raised. Those were both issues from preparers, but also from users as well that we've received through our outreach. So it's not just preparer concerns, user concerns reflected in those issues. And the same criteria will be used to judge both sets of issues.
Thank you. The other development is some progress on our research pipeline projects and the research agenda. As you're probably aware, the pipeline projects were projects that had been identified from our 2015 agenda consultation, where the board decided we need to do something, but let's not make these projects active. Let's not devote resources today. It's just in the pipeline, and as things get prioritized and as we have resources, we'll start them. So we have made two projects active. One is extractives, and the other is pension benefits that depend on asset returns. In addition to that, in June, the board added a project to the research agenda for IBOR. This is dealing with the broader systemic issue about the possible discontinuation of interest rate benchmarks, such as LIBOR. We're focusing, obviously, on the standard-setting piece of it of what are the financial reporting implications, and is there a need for changes to the standard? So the staff are in the process of working through those issues, and we'll be having further discussions with the board. And then the final area that I will touch on before I hand things over to Catherine on disclosure initiative, I know crypto assets has been an area of interest in the past, and so there has been some no worries. There have been some further discussions on that. Since the last meeting, the staff has brought a paper to the board exploring some of the discussing some of the research that the staff has performed in terms of the prevalence of these types of transactions, noting that it's inconsistent. So you have some jurisdictions where you'll find these types of crypto assets. You'll find other jurisdictions where there's just not material holdings of them. Similarly with ICOs, the structure varies transaction by transaction, jurisdiction by jurisdiction, and in a lot of jurisdictions, the regulators just have taken actions that you don't see a lot of this. So that was taken to the board, and then in September, the Interpretations Committee had further discussed these issues, and this will come back to the board for further discussion at a future meeting. And with that, I know Catherine would like to chat with you further about Disclosure Initiative and some developments since our last meeting in June.
Yes, thank you, Neely. So we, back in June at the joint meeting with GPF, I'm sure members will recall we had breakout sessions at which we asked for your advice on which standards the board should select for its targeted standards level review of disclosure. After receiving that feedback from yourselves and talking to other stakeholders and our other consultative groups, the board decided in July to select IAS 19 on pensions and IFRS 13 on fair value measurement for that review. So since that time, our disclosure team has been going through a big exercise to plan an outreach programme, firstly with investors, and given the objectives of the project to really interrogate and improve the way that the board does things in terms of developing disclosure requirements. We are looking to have very detailed meetings with investors on an individual basis, where we will be looking to talk in a great level of depth. So, for example, one of the things we'll be looking to do is understand something of a walkthrough of the analysis that's performed, the inputs to that analysis, the ways in which those inputs are useful, and additional and different things that might achieve your goals. So with that in mind, given the level of detail we're looking for at the moment, we didn't put the disclosure initiative on the agenda for this meeting, but we did want to let the members know that this is happening and invite any members that would be interested and willing to participate in those detailed discussions with us about either of those standards to let myself or Fred's team know so that we can arrange that. So back in June when we had the breakouts, there were a good number of members that expressed detailed views on the two standards we've ultimately ended up picking. And for those of you that is relevant to, we would be really, really grateful to talk to you further. So if anyone is willing and interested, please do let us know and we'll get in touch to arrange an individual meeting.
We had.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. Any questions, comments? Just on the IFRS 17, you know, I'm just a little bit nervous about this. How has this been handled in the past? Because, I mean, my impression was always that, you know, you would go through a very lengthy and detailed process to collect feedback from users, preparers, other stakeholders before coming up with a standard. And then, you know, the standard would sort of, you know, be allowed to perform for a while before you do a post-implementation review. So are there any precedents where, you know, the review of the standard has been opened up kind of before that
adoption
happened?
Yeah.
And is there any way to ensure that this is not going to turn into a never-ending saga? I mean, I understand the board's criteria, but even so, you know, I'm not sure there is a feasible way of giving you any sort of, like, you know, changes without, you know, being back to square one.
Right. So you're absolutely right. The deliberations and the due process is incredibly robust through the standard setting process and the outreach and the feedback that the board receives and considers. It is intended to ensure that we put out a final amendment that is transparently developed and credible and is going to be of a benefit to our stakeholders. Having said that, though, there can be times, and what we have learned not only through the TRG process, but as Nick said, through just other monitoring activities with users and preparers, is that as companies start the implementation process, there could be things that come to our attention that may require some additional consideration. So that's sort of the context. In terms of precedent, the one that comes to mind most recently is revenue, IFRS 15. Not to suggest that it's a similar situation exactly, but it's tricky. I mean, we like I said, it's the board members use the phrase with heavy hearts that they're even having this conversation, and we want to be mindful of what we're hearing. We don't want to turn a blind eye to it, but at the same time, we do recognize that opening it up can be a very challenging situation where, like you said, it may never end. And so the board is focusing very much on these two criteria and not looking to do something that's going to indefinitely extend this, because companies are implementing it today. And if we don't have the uncertain, or if we don't remove some of the uncertainty in the system, then you're going to have all these decisions that are made that are going to, you know, delay the effectiveness, and then tell the external consultants we don't need to renew your contract, and then who knows when the next, you know, the next time it'll come back. So we recognize all of those issues, and as I said, it's with heavy hearts was the phrase that I thought was very appropriate at the board table, that they're even considering and having this conversation. Nick and Tom, yeah. I don't know if you want to add anything more to that.
I think it's important to emphasize that we haven't agreed to open up the standard yet. All we've agreed to is some criteria and some baseline criteria in terms of considering the issues, and we think of those criteria as being necessary but not sufficient to consider those issues, take those issues further forward. I also think that this is a fairly exceptional position that we are. You have to consider that many of these companies are starting from divergent positions to begin with. This is a very unusual situation for us. The final thing I would add, and this is a personal view rather than that of the board, is that I think if there's a sense that this is going to drag on and on and on and become not months but years and years, we have to go and ask constituents again, is this worthwhile use of our resources or not? You know, because it is relative to what else we could be doing in our standard setting activities. So I think that's also personally at the back of my mind.
Very clear. Thank you. Yes,
Paul. Yeah, one question maybe for the board members. Last meeting, we had a discussion and a presentation by our chair about the impact of the insurance regulation, Brexit, and the whole discussion about the future of IFRS and any developments thereafter.
So this was around the EU's consultation, yep, on financial reporting. And so far, all that has been announced on their website is that they had 338 responses to that consultation. I believe we are hoping to see some of the detail this week. So far, that hasn't appeared, and we're Thursday already. There is a conference planned for the end of this month by the EU, which will give some further detail. Our new chairman is speaking at that conference as well. But it's not clear yet whether there's any intention to do carve-ins as a result of that process or put those back on the table. So we're still in a wait-and-see position, really.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, any further questions, comments?
Maybe just a comment that I really appreciate that the board is really taking a tough stance on deciding to open up IFRS 17 again. I think it's really the risks you identified are all valid, and the longer an issue. If you decide to a effective date that is giving even more, I cannot think of a standard that has given so much leeway in the effective date. And what it is bringing us so far is more years of resistance to what has been agreed to. Changing the effective date is probably asking for more years of resistance. That's a really, really big danger. It has proven to be a big danger. So I wish you lots of wisdom and luck.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Neely. Thank you very much, Catherine. And we're moving on to the primary financial statements.
Harold? This is Goro.
Let Goro ask a question.
Oh, hey, Goro.
Has Nelly left?
No, Goro, I'm still here.
Okay. I just want to ask that the about goodwill and impairment, that the about the board's tentative decision made in July. And in Japan, that the newspaper reported that the IASB, the board, decided to review the possibility of reintroduction of amortization as a way of simplify that the accounting treatment of goodwill. And this is so, you know, this is a very... This stimulated, you know, that the kind of, you know, expectation in Japan that the IASB may change the, you know, goodwill accounting. And the, yes, that the, we know the board is, board had decided to review the possibility of reintroduction of amortization, but that in Japan, I'm a little bit concerned that there is a kind of very strong expectation that the IASB is, seriously considering the introduction of amortization instead of, you know, the improvement of impairment test. How this kind, you know, that the, you know, it. I know that it is very difficult to tell, but the, what is the kind of a feeling among the, you know, boards? I found that the only 8 member out of 14 supported that idea of, you know, reviewing that the reintroduction of the amortization, so that the, I'm a bit afraid that the Japanese stakeholders have become too enthusiastic about this decision.
I appreciate that, and I think that's probably a fair concern. I would just observe that the process has a number of steps along the way. And so the board, as you noted, there was a very close vote, but some of the discussion that still needs to be had at the board table is more about the content of what goes into that discussion paper, which is an outreach document to get more information about recognizing that there are these problems with the goodwill impairment test, recognizing that some of the possible solutions that have been explored may not be all that viable or cost beneficial. What are the options for subsequent accounting for goodwill? And does the board want to express a preliminary view one way or the other? And if so, what is that preliminary view? That's just a discussion paper. Then there'd be an exposure draft. So there's, I think to be, I can't remember the phrase you used, but I would just caution that maybe let's go through the process and see how we are each step of the way. I think it's a little bit too early to be very actively enthusiastic because we just don't know. There's still a lot more deliberation that needs to happen and a lot more discussion. I don't know if Nick
thank
or
you very much.
Tom
yeah,
want to
thank
add.
Thank you very much, Mary. That's the, yeah.
I think that's a good summary. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. And I personally welcome that this board tentative decision. As you guys know, that I'm a supporter of amortization, but still, from that experience in the discussion at CMAQ, etc., I'm not too optimistic about that the introduction of amortization. So that your comment is very valuable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Goro. Okay, great. Thank you, Neely.